On the Very Idea, a philosophy podcast. Hello, everyone. Yeah, today is it's a bit of a good day here because I've taken a paid holiday. Here in Japan, we get about 10 paid holidays a year, but the kids tend to get sick, so I use most of them taking time off with the kids when they most certainly and usually catch a cold. But during the coronavirus pandemic, one of the few nice things, I say not too much, that everyone is wearing a mask here and washing their hands out of the cold. And because everyone's washing their hands, the cold is not circulating like it has on previous years. So I get to use my paid holidays for fun while my wife is at work and my healthy kids are in kindergarten. And like Macaulay Culkin, I am home alone. And like Macaulay Culkin, while home alone, I'm going to get up to some hijinks. And these hijinks are in the form of a game. I'm going to say a quote from a philosopher, and you try to identify said philosopher within 5 seconds. Here we go. A concept is a brick. It can be used to build a courthouse of reason. Or it can be thrown through the window. Ooh, look out, James Dean. We got a rebel here. Let me say that one more time. A concept is a brick. It can be used to build a courthouse of reason. Or it can be thrown through the window. Okay, let me count down here. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Lock up your daughters and sons. We got the bad boy philosopher, Gilles Deleuze. And in this, Deleuze is rallying against reason. One of the big thorns in his side. It's for a spontaneous schizophrenic action that is unpredictable in nature and cannot fit into the economic hyper-rationalized models of the capitalist state. Here's a confession. I've never really understood Deleuze. But I know that, you know, I know that he's a somewhat important figure. I've tried to tackle his book, the 1000 Plateaus one, before, but I had to give it up. But this YouTube channel called Plastic Pills gives a really great rundown of him. They really work hard to put these near inscrutable philosophers and work them into an understandable position. They should be given credit for developing their own theories, really, and trying so hard to make some of these philosophers fit into understandable models. Anyway, I don't know who these guys are, but I just came across their channel the other day, but maybe check them out. Plastic Pills. Check them out if Deleuze and people like Derrida and Baudrillard, am I saying that right, are your thing. Anyway, on to the main of the episode. Last time, we talked about moral realism, and this time, we will look at why that theory might be mistaken. In exploring this issue, I will be looking at a bit of John Mackey. A little background info on Mackey. John Mackey was an Australian philosopher of the analytic school who is seen as giving one of the best arguments against the existence of God and religion within the analytic philosophy world. He was, to say the least, an enthusiastic atheist and seemed to relish the idea of taking on religious figures who attempted to defend religion in the philosophical arena. I think he took on Alvin Plantinga a bit. You may know him as J.L. Mackey, as I think that's the way he was introduced to me. He worked out at Oxford. He's been described as an ethical egoist and seems to have embraced Richard Dawkins' book, The Selfish Gene, near the end of his career, as a certain confirmation of his suspicions that we are all just egoists, and even if we aren't, well, too bad, because that's the only moral position that's left, if you even want to call it a moral position. And why is it the only position that's left? Well, that's because he believes in something called error theory. Just a note about error theory. I learned about error theory in the British philosopher A.J. Eyre, who ironically also believed morality was objectively baseless, on the same day for the first time from a professor who didn't like to write things on the board. So I seem to remember thinking that either A.J. Ayer developed the theory or Mackie named it in honor of him. I think I figured it out much later than I should have. Foggy times as an undergrad, before Google, you know, you really just had to sit on a mystery for a while. Now, remember, from the last episode, that moral realists put a lot of stock in the fact that most everyone, when they're making a moral claims in sentences like, Bob is good, are presumably referring to two things in the world, Bob and the predicate that applies to him, is good. Bob is a person in the world, and the predicate is good refers to a certain way of being in the world. Same way as a sentence like snow is white refers to snow, and the predicate is white in the world. They're both descriptive sentences. Linguistic analysis seems to further support this in something called the Geech-Frege problem. We've talked about Frege a bit, the logical philosopher. It's all philosophers are logic, philosopher of logic. Anyway, the Frege-Geech problem is that sentences that express moral judgments can form part of a semantically complex sentences in a way that expressivism cannot easily explain. If we treat a moral claim, such as a sentence, stealing is wrong, is just saying, boo, stealing is wrong, like an outpour of emotion that we cannot make sense of things like conditional. You know, if we just treat these sentences like outpourings of emotion, then we cannot make sense of things like conditionals, if sentences, you know, if you will. We cannot make the conditional, if boo, stealing is wrong, then you should never eat unpaid for grapes from the supermarket. It just doesn't work when you try to put them into conditional sentences. So, people use moral sentences as if they are referring to real moral facts, and do so quite effortlessly. And linguistic analysis seems to understand that moral claims should be understood as referring to the world and moral facts. But otherwise, very entrenched views about linguistic analysis would need to be changed. So, now, Mackie says yes. You know, he says yes, hey, you are correct, moral realists, that the average Joe and Jane refer to moral facts as if they exist in the world. But this is not important because the average Joe and Jane, well, they're wrong. So, error theory, to put it most basically, is that our common everyday thinking about morality is in error. The common conception, or should I say misconception, of morality is that it is based on objective moral facts. But, and this is how the common man and religion and many philosophers understand it, but everyday talk seems to confirm it when we say that something is wrong. But according to Mackie, this type of talk about morality, or the thinking behind it, it's in error. Get it? Hence, error theory. Yeah. Mackie explains that the Geech-Frege problem is just mere misuse of language. He says that on the view that although we go in for talk of moral facts and moral beliefs, such talk is simply a loose manner of speaking. We shouldn't read into it too much. Strictly speaking, there are no moral facts. And they're merely desires, desires that gain our expression in syntactically complex sentences, where expression they must be understood to be exactly the same relation as that which holds between emotions and exclamations such as boo and hooray. I still think, for me personally, I still think that calling it moral skepticism would have been better, or moral anti-realism. But alas, we're humans, and it's our tendency to put our unique spin on everything, be it a variation of a philosophical theory or a tuna casserole. I find it very indicative of the influence of ordinary language philosophy that the theory derived its name on a judgment of a misuse of everyday ordinary language rather than the complementary and more robust judgment that moral facts do not exist. Before the other J.L., J.L. Austin, I bet that the theory either gets termed moral skepticism or moral anti-realism. Also, I had to Google that Austin's initials were also J.L. John Langshaw, as opposed to John Leslie of the Mackie variety. That was a time when philosophers went by their non-surname initials, wasn't it? A.J., J.L., J.L., W.V.O. Seemed to be a little bit of a boy band thing going on with the philosophers at the time. Yeah. Those dreamboats. When did that stop being a thing? Oh, yeah. G.E. Moore, too. Starting the rumor that it was W.B. Yeats who started the whole thing. That trendy bard. Bertrand Russell has some funny stories about him. Apparently, Russell wasn't a huge fan. Anyways. So, Mackey believes that moral realism is false, and he outlines his position in the book on metaethical theory, Ethics, Inventing Right and Wrong, from 1977. Get it? Inventing right and wrong leads one to believe that, some sort of constructivism will be advocated, but it's kind of arguable whether Mackey was a constructivist. So let's explore the arguments that are behind there's two distinct arguments centering around his error theory. Let's examine them. The first argument is often called the argument from queerness. That, Mackey describes in his own words, that if there were objective values, then they would be entities or qualities or relations of a very strange sort, utterly different from anything else in the universe. Correspondingly, if we are aware of them, it would have to be by some special faculty of moral perception or intuition, utterly different from our ordinary ways of knowing anything else. When we ask the awkward question of how can we be aware of such things, none of our ordinary accounts of sensory perception or introspection or the framing and confirming of explanatory hypotheses or inference or logical construction or any conceptual analysis or any combination of these things, he's naming quite a few things, he's trying to be thorough, will provide a satisfactory answer. He adds that the idea that we have of a special sort of moral intuition is a lame answer. He doesn't believe that we have any sort of unique thing as humans, some sort of something inside called a moral intuition. Because of the sheer strangeness of what these moral entities would have to be, they have a queerness about them. Obviously, this is not a terminology that has aged well. Let's see, there's a strangeness about them. Yeah. The next argument that Mackey uses is the argument from relativity. Because Mackey's a really great writer, which is, let's quote from him, again, the argument from relativity.
The argument from relativity has as its premise the well-known variation in moral codes from one society to another, and from one period to another, and also the differences in moral beliefs between different groups and classes within a complex community. Such variation is in itself merely a truth of descriptive morality, a fact of anthropology which entails neither first-order nor second-order ethical views.
Yeah, and he goes on there for a minute, and he says, disagreement about moral codes seems to reflect people's adherence to and participation in different ways of life. The causal connection seems to be mainly that way round. It is that people approve of monogamy because they participate in a monogamous way of life, rather than that they participate in a monogamous way of life because they approve of monogamy.
Notice the direction of causality.
So that's a big old quote there, but Mackey here is just saying that cultures across space and time have often very different moral beliefs, and they can't all, on pain of contradiction, be objectively correct. Taken together, he claims that although most people are making moral judgments where they implicitly claim that they're pointing out to something objective, these claims are all false. Here, Mackey, like the moral realists, uses anthropological evidence to support his theory. But where the moral realist says that anthropology has, by looking at how humans use moral language, should point in the direction of moral realism, Mackey counters, and he says by taking an even deeper look at human anthropology, not just within one culture, but across all cultures, it will show that moral talk varies so widely, I suppose, too, that we should not be so misled into thinking that it could ever represent anything unified as a single block of moral facts that we could refer to. If anything, the anthropological evidence
shows an intractable and diverse plurality of moral outlooks. I will stop there and look at some possible responses to these two arguments from Mackey. That is the basis of error theory, the argument from queerness and the argument from relativity. I'll do that next time. I just want to say that it seems that in my research there seems to be people who think that John Mackey, because he denied the possibility of moral realism, was someone who believed that we should be ethical egoists. Mary Midgley has made that claim. But I have also come across people who have said Mackey proposed a comprehensive moral theory based around the concept of rights. So he has, you know, he's not just taking away from morality, he's also developed his own moral theory. I don't really know enough about Mackey to say myself. So on this understanding, Mackey was a bit of an ethical constructivist. So this seems to be a bit of a controversial matter. So, for example, there's a book published in 2010 with titled A World Without Values, essays on John Mackey's moral error theory that debated his legacy and how much moral theory could still be constructed if we take Mackey seriously. Mackey, despite his strong opinions on chipping away at moral realism, you know, he was seen as this wonderful person. From the Wikipedia page, Mackey is said to have been capable of expressing total disagreement in such a genial way that the person being addressed might mistake his comment for a compliment. This personal style is exemplified by the following words from the preface to Ethics, Inventing Right and Wrong. In his own words, "I am nowhere mainly concerned to refute any individual writer. I believe that all those to whom I have referred, even those with whom I disagree most strongly, have contributed significantly to our understanding of ethics. Where I have quoted their actual words, it is because they have presented views or arguments more clearly or more forcefully than I could put them myself." Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful words, yeah. Anyway, thank you for listening.
On the Very Idea, a philosophy podcast.